Good evening, Texas. I'm Kevin Allen here with
Caleb Jensen.
And we're bringing you another episode of Riding Right with the Raiders. Here with us today is our special guest from Walker County, president of the Walker County Young Republicans and SHSU Turning Point USA president, Nick Walker.
So I'm Nick Walker of Walker County, and I go to Sam Houston State University, studying political science and environmental science. So I just pretend to be a scientist. It's great. But truly, I'm just someone trying to make a difference in my community, whatever way I can. And so far, that's been organizing my fellow youth towards conservative ideas. And it's also manifested itself in such ways as cleanups and volunteering and connecting with the community as a whole, you know, because everything is at stake for everyone, whether you're old or you're young. And that's the great thing about Huntsville and Walker County. Everyone's got together, you know.
When did you start getting involved in politics?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting one. You see, the first book I ever read when I was in elementary was the elementary biography of John McCain. I was like six. So I've always had an inkling of interest in politics. That's how I learned what POW was. But more than just politics, I'm interested in history. History has allowed me to have a greater understanding of how the present day compares to the past and how it's just not normal, you know? It gives me this broader perspective. And so from there, naturally, I became conservative. And a conservative is someone who wants to conserve what's natural and right. So in a sense, I've always had interest in politics. Because politics is the thing related to everything else. It is at once philosophy, economics, psychology. There's so many things to it.
Right. So you're also president of Turning Point USA at your university, correct?
Yes, sir.
So I think Caleb will agree with me here. At Texas Tech University, we have an issue where Turning Point USA comes online, goes offline, and it's just like a semesterly thing. Either they have membership or they don't. Is that something y'all experience at your university?
Well, I mean, that's something I think every university, every organization experiences at some point. I'm not the first founder of Turning Point at my school. I'm probably not the last founder of it either. You know, there's been times where it started up and, you know, came offline, as you say. But there come students who care, some who can, and so they organize and they mobilize. And I find it most active during election years because that's when everyone's kind of tuned in. Right now, everything is going pretty steady, though, because we make it more than just about elections, that kind of thing. We make it about a general cultural thing, you know, because that's ultimately what you got to do. You got to combine politics and culture, and that's what makes people care, especially young people, you know. So we've done range days. Like the other day, we taped up the Communist Manifesto on a board, and we shot it so much. I mean, we put holes in communist theory. It was great.
That definitely sounds like a blast.
But yeah, literally. Hey, pun intended. There we go.
What got you interested in Turning Point? Because I'm always really interested when, you know, people connect faith to politics. There's like a weird stagnation where a lot of people have gotten away from that. And I'm like, no, like, they do correlate. So what got you interested in TPUSA?
I definitely want to hear a lot about Turning Point USA, because since we don't really have a chapter, I definitely really want to hear about what it's like at Turning Point, because one, we don't have one, and I'm just a huge fan of Charlie Kirk and everything that he's done, and I definitely want to hear what your take on it is.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you guys don't have one, you should definitely start one. But you're at Texas Tech. Is that the Raiders? Yeah, that has to be the Raiders, right?
Yeah, Texas Tech, Red Raiders. We had a chapter. Andrew Sinclair was the president.
I know that guy. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Once he graduated out, it just kind of fizzled.
Yeah, and that's always the issue with some of these is the attrition thing. Every year more graduate, so you have to build it for the long term, build up your officers. That's why I plan to transition my presidency to somebody else before I graduate. I still remain as like a treasurer, that kind of thing, to help out the organization in the long haul. But yeah, what got me started was coming in college. I always had an idea for the America Club, right? I just call it the America Club. It's a group of young people who love America, simple as that. And then it turns out there's this organization with like millions of dollars behind it. So, hey, I work with you guys. You could call it Turning Point USA. But Turning Point, I find it very interesting, right? Like, what is it turning from? Well, it's turning from the socialists and the Marxists who have gripped the campuses, both from the professor side and the activist student side. There's been an infestation of cultural Marxism ever since the 1960s, brought out onto our campuses by people like Saul Alinsky, who had trained Obama and Hillary Clinton, and, you know, who they admitted had worked with them. And it's something we got to root out because it's not natural. Young people, they're impressionable, trying to find themselves. And these socialists, they're trying to take advantage of that. And then, so what's the point, right? Well, the point is America is something worth fighting for. It's not just an idea, it's a people. And it's something that we have to work on each and every day to build it block by block and also maintain it block by block because they're trying to destroy it block by block. And if you don't know what the USA is, at Turning Point USA, well, it might be Joe Biden. I don't know. So that's what Turning Point USA means.
Wow, that was very well put. Yeah, I'm also a Charlie Kirk fan. I love that you know, he takes on topics like immigration, or as I've often called it lately, migration. Because if they were immigrating here, well, that would be a different story. Because there's a process for that.
It's just a complete invasion now. It's an infestation of the worst kinds of cartel criminals and drunk drivers and just general degenerates all around. You know, selling fentanyl in our communities, destroying them and rooting them outright completely. And then they're waving the Mexican flag or the Honduran flag. And yet they say, hey, man, wait, don't send me over there. Like, what do you mean? Your country is so beautiful and amazing, isn't it? But like, oh, no, actually send me over there. You know, this is an invasion of unprecedented scale.
Yeah, that's very, you know, I've heard a lot of Republicans say, you know, it doesn't really make sense for them to be holding up the Mexico flag. What they should be flying is the American flag and not, you know, violently protesting and throwing a fit if they want to stay here. They're kind of doing the opposite of what they're protesting against.
Yeah. I seen a clip just today, and there was two police officers standing in the middle of the highway where they had recently protested, and of course there was rocks and everything, and apparently there was an American flag laying on the ground. Two officers went over to the American flag, lifted it up, and trifolded it. It was honestly just more heartwarming to see that, just the fact that our police and our military are fighting everything they've got against everybody who hates the fact that they're doing their job.
Yeah, what's the, because we've had a bit of an influence here in, I wouldn't say influence, but we've had some protest here in Lubbock regarding immigration and what's been going on. What's it like over there in Walker County?
Oh, it's, currently it's really, really not so bad. We've only had about one protest a few weeks back in support of mass migration. So, of course, I had reported it to ICE, like, hey, they're gathering right at this park. You guys might want to show up. like fishing in a barrel at that point. And I think we're going to have one of those No King's Day protests going on in Huntsville on Saturday. Of course, I'll be out of town, unfortunately. It would be fun to deal with. Those protests are going on all over the country this coming Saturday, maybe 1,000 of them. And unfortunately, at some point, at some place, something terrible is going to happen. And the media is going to run with it. It's going to be this year's George Floyd crisis, or whatever they want to call it. And they'll make a mountain out of a molehill, all for acting fool. That's quite unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't know, because you're new to my social media. Back in, right before Easter Sunday, I had raised the alarm in Lubbock because the tech Democrats pulled together with Planned Parenthood, A Straight Alliance, Tech Communist, and a host of other orgs, and created the Democrats for Texas org chapter here at Tech. And right after they did that, they put together one of those events you just spoke about. And at Texas Tech, we have this thing called the free speech area. It's an unconstitutional zoning of free speech. And they got permission to host this event in the Memorial Circle, where Tech has the big masked rider statue. And
Memorial Circle is actually a dedication to all of the students who went and fought in World War II that basically got pulled out of the dorms and got shipped off to World War II. It's basically a memorial for them.
Wow. Okay. So it's worse than I thought.
Yeah.
So they hosted this event there. And when they did that, they chose the day before Easter. And I raised the alarm because if they want to protest, I'm fine with them protesting. I don't care as long as they're not hurting nobody. But the flyer for it was a crown and it was bleeding. And it was just very anti-Semitic to me. And there was a guy running against Jody Arrington who was also part of that. And it's just crazy to me that they're able to come onto campus and influence that type of narrative and rhetoric, and that universities will not have any accountability for it, you know, unless, of course, something stops making them money.
Yeah, it's all about the grade, you know. I think the bleeding crown would be like a reference to Jesus. So, yeah, there's a lot of anti-Christian stuff going on at these protests and rallies. I've actually went undercover at some of these near the Fort Worth area, and they were saying all kinds of blasphemies against the Holy Spirit, against Mary, against Jesus. I mean, these people, I think they're possessed, you know, quite frankly. Either possessed or very mentally ill, because this is not sane behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very... First of all, I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud to be a Texan. But it's heartbreaking for me to look, you know, at my peers and see people going against our state and our country, our Constitution. And, there's a sense of what went wrong. And I think you were right earlier in how you had approached the topic. And we've really got to get to the root of these problems and start addressing them there. And I do think border security is a start, because there's no way that we're going to be able to address these issues if we don't get some law and order put back in place here soon.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we need order, not chaos. And they have, a lot of them, let's be frank, they have daddy issues, right? I mean, the family is in complete chaos. That's why they're so against any order at all. At least the anarchist and the socialist moral order. Of course, they have this thing called anarcho-tyranny, right? So basically, anarcho-tyranny works like this. Let's say you're in Portland or New York City, but you could go out and commit a crime, steal somebody's phone, let's say, or attack somebody, and you're released about 113 times just to do it again the next day and the next 114th time. But if that guy's trying to steal your phone and you punch him in the face, or maybe you shoot him if he has a knife on you, guess what? Now that's 20 years, buddy, because you're not allowed to defend yourself. So they crack down on law-abiding citizens while allowing the worst of the worst to be released. And that just goes to show the demented mindset that these leftists have at every level. And there are some high levels, you know, in the government, in the media, the academia. The 2024 election was a great battle we won, but it was only one battle. There's still so much we got to do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. And there are very powerful and wealthy people involved in this, and entities is a term that I like to use when I talk about this. There's a lot to go into when you get into that portion of it. And I've complained about this in Lubbock and the West Texas area. We have a very high... What's a good way to... There's not a good way to explain this. We have a very high sex trafficking and child sexual assault problem.
Yeah.
Very high pedophile problem. And a lot of times, in Lubbock, we have this Facebook page called Lubbock County Mugshots, and I tend to keep my eyes on it, and I've noticed a lot of these guys and women too, you know, it's not just men, it's women, they're repeat offenders. They're getting a slap on the wrist, getting out, doing it again. But the only time this stuff is making the news is when some guy goes to prison because he shot a guy for walking in on him raping his daughter or something like that, defending her. Or he goes after the guy that molested her. That's the only time that stuff makes the news. And it's a shame, because I'm of the opinion, you know, yes, two wrongs don't make a right, an eye for an eye. But they're missing the big picture here. You're letting these other people constantly back out and acting like they've done nothing. And then the people that try to do right, that had to take it to the next level to protect their own, to protect their family, you're punishing them instead.
I feel like it's the Biden administration to blame, because, one, during their administration, this kind of stuff happened a lot, especially across the country. And I think the most we've seen out of the Biden administration with this kind of crime rate was definitely out of New York. And it was crazy. They would get picked up, booked, and it was basically like that episode of SpongeBob. Can't do the time, don't do the crime. And then not even 30 seconds later, all right, you're free to go.
I mean, that's pretty much what happens. And it's sad because, you know, even Trump is dealing with judges that are way out of line and not doing their job. And I think... you know, going back to the Operation Hope gala that we went to, are you familiar with James O'Keefe, Mr. Walker?
Oh, yes, I've met him a few times. He's a great fellow.
Yeah, so he's got this documentary called Line in the Sand, and it deals with immigration. I mean, that video was chilling, it was shocking, gripping. And it dealt with illegal immigration, stuff that was happening at the border that the Biden administration knew about. By the way, I haven't forgot about how the Biden administration blew smoke at me trying to talk to me about how they've helped people with disabilities and patients with medical blah, 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 when they didn't do anything. But also, it delved a little bit into sex trafficking. And it really seems like a lot of that also, unfortunately, has made its way into a lot of the government here in America. Do you have any, number one, do you have any take on that? Number two, do you think immigration ties into that too? Because I'm convinced that that does come into play.
Oh, yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, this is just at every level, whether you're talking about the mass trafficking coming from and across the border, or even those within the country, trafficking American children. I'm not just talking about Western Texas or California somewhere. I'm talking about Massachusetts. I'm talking about nice suburban areas, the breaking into people's homes, the taking children. And this is at every level. I mean, does anyone remember Jeffrey Epstein? Right?
Oh, yeah. The guy that committed suicide, quote.
Oh, yeah. That's what they say, you know. There's all the conspiracy theorists were saying, oh, there's these rich celebrities and powerful people trafficking children on islands, and people call them crazy, right? At this point, I wouldn't be a conspiracy theorist. These guys have been right, like, 31 to 0 on so many things. Also, like, the whole China flu, you know, made in a Chinese lab. And then earlier you had mentioned how the administration kind of permitted some of this to go on. Because you got Joe, I call him Pedo Joe, which is an even better name than Lazy Joe, Sleepy Joe, because his daughter, Ashley, would take showers with him even at 12, 13 years old. And it was written in her verified diary, and she was obviously very disturbed by this. No man takes a shower with his daughter. You know, not at 13, not at 12. I mean, that's disturbing. And that's who is leading our government. And it's just a terrible thing going on that we allow people in such positions of power. Of course, we remove this one. But now we have to remove the rest of the problem from our country. Because when pedophiles come in and they attack a child, in some ways, they're giving that kid a life sentence because the pain of that experience is with them for all their life. And meanwhile, they're released, what, 5 years, 10 years, if they're even caught at all. They have very high recidivism rates, and that's why you have to castrate them. You have to cut it off at the source, because oftentimes it's a cycle. People get abused, and they spread that abuse. So you have to stop it completely. Another big thing is pornography, right? It desensitizes people to all sorts of evil, and that's why we have to put limits on it.
And you're right, I agree on all that. Just to touch on immigration one last time here. You know, when you talk about immigration, you know, do you think it's possible that between ICE, local police departments, and all of the other law enforcement, let's just call them law enforcement, do you think it's a situation such that if we could get this under control, they would be able to do their job better and actually go after a lot of these sex offenders, drug traffickers, producers of fentanyl, and kind of focus on their job better because the crime rate would drop?
Yeah, of course, you know, because right now our law enforcement is spread so thin. They're having to not only deal with, you know, the mass invasion going on, they're having to deal with the fentanyl epidemic, they're having to deal with an insane increase in crime in our urban cities and the decline of our civilization in real time. And they're spread thin. And these interlopers, these attackers, they're well-armed, not with guns that they buy. So if a Democrat says, oh, well, it's the guns. No, they get it from the cartel. They get it from across the border. And they have so much of this stuff. We need to equip our law enforcement to fight back, and also to take off the gloves to allow them to fight back, because right now they're fighting with one hand tied behind their back. The law enforcement, they know who these people are. They know where they live. They know what gangs they're a part of. I mean, we need to have one swift, strong day where they're cracked down on and cracked down on hard. Because there's so many people. I was reading just the other day, there's this 97-year-old woman who was brutally beaten, raped, and killed. And then just the other day, I think it was the same week, this World War II veteran who fought for a country, and think of it, it's been 80 years now. He's lived a whole life here in America, and he got beaten by some thug. And what's going to happen to the thug? He gets released in no time, gets a slap on the wrist. Oh, we can't allow it. We need to enforce the death penalty. It has to be swift.
I do think bureaucracy does get in the way. I mean, there is so much bureaucracy nowadays. It makes it really hard for law enforcement to do their job game wardens to do their job, state troopers, you know, just all levels of law enforcement. And that carries right into the judicial system, too. You know, there's certain things they want to rule on and they can't because there's a process to it. And they have to follow that process. You said you're a environmental major of some type, correct?
Yeah, so I'm a minoring in environmental science.
What's your take on immigration's impact on the environment before we dive into that topic?
Well, I think that's a very interesting one. Because when you have a mass migration at such a level that the people are being displaced entirely in some cities, and bringing in a culture where they don't even speak English, where they go against American values. So some argument that this could be tied to biodiversity, just as there is invasive species coming in and stripping out the nutrients of plants. One of these species is called a dodder, so D-O-D-D-E-R. It's this nasty little thing that wraps itself around Texas plants and strips it of all its nutrients. And the same thing is happening by the cartels, by the mass invasion going on. So there's a big tie there. And also I believe that people are rooted in the soil, and that just as the land sustains the people must sustain the land. Because in the Bible, it says that we're meant to be the steward of this good earth. And that's something I try to live by. So yeah, it's a whole lot to tie into there.
So, you know, when you bring up the environment and everything like that, one really hot topic here in West Texas is the windmills. And there's an argument to be made there that green energy really isn't green. You can travel around Texas, at least over in here, and see oil just running down the sides of them. You can see them catching fire. Why don't you kind of give us your take on windmills, and we'll kind of dive into some of the stuff I've been told about them.
So windmills is an interesting thing. Now, I love renewable energy. I love green energy. Green, mean, and clean is great for green jobs. But I would say of the power sources, windmills are probably my least favorite. One is they're an eyesore. Two, of course, they kill the birds. Three is what's known as the flickering effect. So people who live in farms and places like this or live near windmills in general, they could actually become sick just by the flickering effect of the windmills blocking out the sun. And this could be done at a very subtle level. So it's just not good. And then I guess number four is they fall apart within about 15 years, and it's very expensive to replace them. Personally, I love nuclear energy because it's zero emissions, it's clean, it's green, and all that good stuff. But yeah.
So, I've been told, and this is kind of tied into environmental. I mean, it is. It's related to it, but it goes in a different direction. I haven't taken classes like you have because I'm a different major, right? I'm pre-med with a psychology major and a minor in chemistry. But I've been told, and I don't know if this is true because I've tried to really look into it. And with AI right now, it's becoming really hard to find what's fact and what's fiction online. But when you talk about solar power and the windmills, I've been told that Texas does not own a lot of the rights to those, that there's a company coming out of, like, Canada that has a lot of the rights.
I mean, I'm sure there's companies all over the world who want to invest in Texas, but we got to keep it local. This has to be ultimately spearheaded by Americans and for Americans, but because we're the best innovators. I was just at the Conservative Energy Network in Houston a few months ago, and they were talking about stuff I could hardly even imagine, like hydroelectric, geothermal, all sorts of exciting inventions. And all of them were conservative, all of them were on the right, and it's going to create so many jobs. Oil has always been the lifeblood of Texas, and my father, he worked in oil for a bit, you know, an offshore oil rig and that kind of thing. but ultimately we're transitioning over. But of course, we can't do this too fast. You know, we have to use oil as a transitionary fuel. But yeah, if it's Canadian, I don't want it. They're not going to do a good job.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. We do have a large investment in oil and gas, petroleum, and those resources right now. You know, I myself, I've always been a fan of Nikola Tesla. Always just a huge fan of him. And so I don't. Yeah, I don't have, like, I don't hate renewable energy. I think if we could figure out a way to just create a situation where you could drive a vehicle and never have to charge it, never have to put gas in it, it just had some sort of constant energy, great. You're going to help a lot of people. You just caused some prices to go down, and you're going to sell a lot of these. At the same time, I don't want to put the oil and gas industry out of place, because right now, again, we have a large investment in them, and the way our economy is set up, we need them for a while, for a lot longer period of time than we are going to be able to switch completely into renewable. And I think you're right when you talk about nuclear energy. I've always found nuclear energy really interesting. That said, in regards to, like, the big beautiful bill, where do you kind of stand on the EV mandate?
I think EVs, they still have some ways to go. I think nothing should really be mandated. I think incentives are a lot better. And plus, when you incentivize something, people are more likely to get it than just mandating it. But this innovation, it is happening. Solar panels, they're about 95% cheaper than they were even just a decade ago. It's very exciting to see where EVs will go from here. Oil and gas, as an industry, it's always been big in Texas, but truly, Texas is just an energy state. And we want to keep it that way. We want to keep it energy dominant. And so we could do this by creating these green, clean jobs. And they're going to be high paying, especially once we have the mass deportations and we put a cap on the H-1Bs coming in, because we need American jobs for the American worker. And we also need to redefine, like, this whole term environmentalist, because when I first say the word environmentalist, people may think, oh, Greta Thunberg, or maybe some blue-haired person somewhere, they, them. But truly, Theodore Roosevelt, Republican, he founded the national parks. Richard Nixon, he founded the EPA. So we have a rich legacy, and we just have to kind of embrace that. I believe it's the winning message in the future. And so is green energy. That's the winning combination right there for our economy.
So I think you'd be the great person to ask this to. You're a conservative leader where you're from. So what is a conservative environmentalist to you?
Well, it's someone who doesn't just talk the talk, right? Like, I'm not Nick Talker. I'm Nick Walker. But, yeah, that's pretty good. All right, now let me steal a quote from someone who isn't me. Ross Perot. You guys know Ross Perot? He ran back in the 90s. He said, the activist is not the one who says the river is dirty. The activist is the one who cleans the river. And that's something I kind of take to heart as a conservative, as someone who believes in common sense and actual solutions, unlike the left. So that means conserving our parks, because conservation is in the name conservative. Like, what are we really conserving if not our beautiful American land? Another thing is creating green, clean jobs. And then just coming together as a community, you know? So what I've done is I've had cleanups at Riverside, Texas. We got about 20 bags out of there. We went down to Galveston to clean that up. We cleaned up our local school, because the left, they're always littering, especially after a protest, even an environmental protest, right? They'll say, hey, we got to keep theirs clean. And then they're leaving these nasty plastic wrappers everywhere. It's the most hypocritical thing. You know, of course, these are the same people who say, my body, my choice, unless it's a vaccine. So hypocrisy, that's the whole thing. Yeah, we've also done the tree planting thing for Veterans Day.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. So first, to get a tree planted, apparently there's a whole process if you want to have it done in a city park. So it took me quite a while, but I was persistent, as I am. And I got to work with the local government on it. We were able to pick a spot. I even negotiated with them. At first, I was thinking my org would have to pay like $700. But I actually got the city to pay for it because they wanted to plant one in the future anyway. So we were able to dedicate this one to our great veterans on Veterans Day. And, you know, that's the great thing about a tree plant. It's kind of like, you can kind of think of a metaphor, you know. We got to plant trees whose shade we may not one day enjoy, right? It's all about the next generation. So that's a great thing. Another thing we did in the conservation space is we held a hog hunt just a few weeks ago. These boars, I'm sure you guys have them up there in North Texas, are causing havoc. So we got to go hunting. And it's my first time hog hunting or hunting in general, and it's a lot of fun. So that's
you
another
talking
way.
About?
Oh, yeah, those beasts. Those,
you're not talking about javelinas. You're talking about the big ones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the big boys. I mean, these things, they're brutal. They're charging at us. I had an AK-47. And I had like a mismatched camo uniform. I was looking like a third world militia. Oh, I had five of my best friends. It was a lot of fun to ride in the back of a truck. So, yeah, we hunted these hogs, and it was just a great day.
You know what would be really fun is if we could get the different college Republican orgs to get together and just go on a big hunting trip.
That would be fun.
I don't think people realize if you call yourself an environmentalist or conservative, you're supposed to support hunting. There's a reason behind trophy hunting. There's a reason behind being an outdoorsman, a sportsman. And that culling is often necessary, and it is necessary, to keep the population in check. All that stuff is heavily monitored by different governments and agencies. And they're not just going out there and killing off animals till they go extinct. No, they have a population often on land. And when that starts growing in a certain way that is detrimental to the environment and the ecosystem, they'll select. That's why it's also why it's so expensive. They'll select one of those animals, and they'll set up the hunt, and then they have to get you in there, and you have to go with the guide, depending if you go overseas or something to do it, like Africa. And that money a lot of it goes right back in to the preserve that you're hunting on to continue doing what they're doing.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, they have all these super agreements, so it's a win-win for everybody, including the environment. Boars are particularly pernicious in the sense that as much as we hunt them, they're growing exponentially. They're now present in every county in Texas, and now they're going to places all over the United States. And they eat their own babies, war babies, the dogs. I mean, these things are a complete menace. So so would I go drive 9 hours to kill like a random bunny somewhere? I mean, maybe not if I have to pay so much money. But boars, they haven't come. Complete invasive species.
What I'm hearing is the Democrats have switched from a jackass to a boar.
Oh, yeah, really.
I mean,
I don't think they're as tough as a boar, nor as intelligent as a boar. These boars are actually pretty smart. Smart and tough. So really thoughtful. Yeah, donkeys are kind of smart in their own way, too, except AOC.
It is very surprising at how smart boars are. I mean, they'll figure out how your traps work. They'll avoid areas. I mean, you're talking about a highly intelligent animal. Because I've dealt with them before, and here's a lot of people don't know: when you shoot it, a boar, you better be sure it's down for the count. Don't ever assume it is, ever. You know, when you go hunting for a boar, take a backup person. They have a shotgun to kind of get your back. But also you carry that big knife. Well, that big knife is, if it's still alive, you could slit its throat real quick. Because those things have a tendency to spring back to life once you get close. They will play dead on you.
Yeah. They basically...
Yeah, we shot this one like 11 times. They just jumped right back up like nothing happened. Well, really, you're just angry.
Do you have a favorite caliber? I'm a 7.62 fan, personally.
I mean, this is going to be the craziest answer ever. In some ways, I kind of like 22s. I know that sounds insane. Like, man, that's for squirrels. I mean, I would never shoot a squirrel, but there's no recoil. I have this one AR. It's quieter than a BB gun. I mean, it's just a work of art. Besides that, I would say a 38. I have this 38 snub nose with a little laser on it. Lightweight, airweight, concealed carry. So that's very nifty. But what about you, guys?
Caleb, I'll let you go first.
I like 7.62 as well.
I'd probably say a 45. In my opinion, I've always wanted to get me a 1911 45. It has been a classic. That is the American gun other than the 50 cal Desert Eagle.
Oh, I've seen some videos that have gone horribly wrong with people that didn't know what they were doing with those.
The recoil on those are insane.
So my answer's a little interesting, I think. I like 7.62, but I also really like 30-06 if you're dealing with bore. But as far as just having like a good outdoor gun that I could carry on me if I was hiking in case I ran into a predator, I really like Colt's 10mm that they have. It is a nasty, nasty caliber. And the recoil to me is not that bad. I just, you know, I'm a college student, so I don't have the budget for one of those. Because I don't think people realize either. And that the only reason I would go to that is just to make sure I could take down what I needed to take down and push it back. But you don't really need a massive caliber to go hunting, like a lot of people think. Like there's a point where you're hitting overkill.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like once you're in the moment, you're in the zone. The adrenaline pumps in, and then it's just complete overkill. Yeah, we had brought some 30 ops, and you know, wish we could have brought a 50 caliber, but we did bring a 10 millimeter, so that was nice. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What So I've talked to you a little bit, and you talked about the youth here in America, and I get the feeling that's something that's real close to your heart and that maybe God may have really instilled in you. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Well, 100%. You know, as a young person, I care about young people. Even when I'm an old person, I still care about young people. Because young people are the ones who have the most at stake. They're the ones who are going to have to live through the policies of today for the next 80 years. Meanwhile, those who are 80, who have sought their power only for their own personal fame and glory, they're like, man, I'm going to get reelected anyway, or I'm going to die in 5 years. Do what I want, secure my own glory. Who cares what happens to the next generation? But fundamentally, we have to be there for them, especially our children. I mean, what kind of world is little Jimmy and little Susie going to wake up to on Christmas morning in 2040? I mean, most people would say it's not going to be a nice morning. And we have to do something about that. We can't accept the abyss. You know, we can't accept this bleakness. We have to have optimism. We have to have hope because the youth are the future. And they're the ones who are the inheritors of this great civilization. We have the capacity and the energy not only restore to what it once was, but to make it greater than it's ever been before. So, yeah, we have to get young people to care. Because we're the ones who are going to really change things. I mean, think about our founding fathers, right? Like James Madison, he was what? Like 23? The rest of them were like 19, 21. I mean, these were our founding fathers, founding a nation. And these days, you know, I met some fellas who are afraid to order a drink at Starbucks. I mean, hey, I'd be afraid to order a drink at Starbucks too when they have like the blue hair and the nose piercing. I'm like, what are you? So, yeah. we have to make a difference. We have to do it now.
So, this is why a lot of people don't understand why I say it's the goal is not to get young people to take action right now. The goal is to get them to care because they have stopped caring.
That's the first step.
Yeah, you know, if they take action while they don't care, chances are you might get them to do something, but they're not going to go out there and do it again. And you just wasted a lot of effort and energy. If you get them to care, you get them invested, you show them that there is hope, there is something to hold on to, that their life does have meaning, and you validate that for them, you're going to have people that are willing to fight for their country.
It ties into so many things. We need people who care and people who can, right? Because if you can do something, but you don't care about it, I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, you know, nothing's going to get done. Or if you care about something, but can't do anything about it, that's just tragic. That's sad. So we need to be caring, but also capable. So we have to develop the skills to do what we need to do. And what we need to do may vary to each and everyone's vocation, but ultimately in collaboration with the whole of the community. But the most fundamental thing I'd say is family, because family is the foundation of our civilization, of our nation. The weakening of our families means the weakening of our nation. And strong families mean a strong nation. And that's why the left tries to tear apart this foundation, to tear apart the family, to tear apart the nation. So that's something we have to really care about. You know, it's our families and our country, so, and our faith. So flag, faith, family.
You definitely said it.
You know, and that's, we've seen the left historically try multiple times to go after the families in America. And then you get into the foundation. What is the foundation of a family? You know, when a man and a woman form a union, and there's nobody else in there, the only person in there is God. God is their foundation. You got to have that relationship with God, with Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit. And I think the left realized a long time ago that they were going to have to go a little bit further than just family. And they've really, what we've seen more, in my opinion, in America, when you talk about politics, I think it's really taken a turn into spiritual warfare is what we've been witnessing. What's your take on
that? Well, I mean, it's 100% just because, just as I was at these protests, and I heard them blaspheme the Holy Spirit. It's quite clear that there's something deep and amended within their souls. And that's why when I'm at these places, I don't hate them. I actually care a whole lot about these people because they've been misled and misguided, whether it's by people with bad intentions or something far more sinister. And we got to be there for them spiritually because ultimately we're not just fighting for those who agree with us, right? We're fighting for those who also disagree with us so that they could build strong, healthy families. Because a lot of them, they're dreamers too. They dream of something better in a warped kind of view, but they've been misled as to what that truly is. And when, in this modern age, God has disappeared, I believe it's Nietzsche, who declared God dead, right? First off, that's just insane to see, because as I'm driving right now, I see God in every tree and every cloud, you know, and the voices and the souls of the people driving near me. Except that one driver with the New Jersey license plate, and oh my. But no, God is omnipresent. He's everywhere. And we need to remember that because there's a lot of young people right now who are hurting, who have a void in the soul, who are depressed, and they fill that void with pornography, with degeneracy, with lies and false ideas. And this is all meant to destroy them because Satan, he's the deceiver, he's a destroyer, and he's leading the charge against our country right now. And against our youth, especially with the child mutilations going on. You know, this isn't just a disagreement over taxes anymore. It's literally the limbs of our children.
You definitely put it in a way that I honestly can't even... I'm at a loss for words right now, but I kind of have the same background as you. I completely put all my faith into myself and my family. And one of the main reasons why I wanted to start bringing change as soon as I came to Texas, and the fact that I moved to Texas, it was either going to be go to college and move to Texas or join the military, which I really wanted to do, but unfortunately got influenced in the wrong way. But one of the main things that brought me to where I am today is the fact that I survived a school shooting at my high school. And it definitely opened up my eyes after a few months after it that I needed to put nothing but faith into the way that God has planned for me, and I needed to spread the word and make sure to help protect our younger generations so they don't have to go through the things that I went through.
Oh yeah, 100%. And just first off, God bless you, because I mean that's something unimaginable. You know, and it should be something unimaginable, because it shouldn't happen. And it wasn't happening back in the 50s and the 60s when you had a strong, stable foundation rooted in family and faith. You could actually bring your gun to school. In the classroom, it was fine. In fact, it was encouraged at many points. But today, you have this swell of mass shootings. And what's the root of that? What causes someone to pull the trigger? You know, it's something demonic. You could look in the eyes of these shooters. Is something very sinister. Another thing is big pharma being pushed on kids. Maybe a kid says that they're oppressed. Okay, how about take away, you know, the 10 hours a day they're spending on screens exposed to horrific things, and then see how they're faring, right? Or maybe get rid of the Red 40 and all this poison in our food. Or maybe pay them proper care and attention, and they wouldn't be feeling in such a way, and they wouldn't be so isolated to where they would do such a thing. And most of all, Jesus Christ is what would be the root and the anchor of all of this. Because I had grown up in a family that never went to church, never read the Bible or anything like that. But when I came to college, and I'm the first one in my family to go to college, I started getting involved with this one group called Chi Alpha. And it's a sort of campus ministry, so I got to hear the good word, and that was a word worth hearing. And that's what a lot of young folks need to hear today, that they're not alone, that there's someone with them always, someone who loves them. And I think that's how we could get rid of these school shootings and this disaster going on in our country today.
I think another thing that needs to be brought back in school, I think Trump has a plan for it, but eventually bring God and faith back into school and making sure that the children know that God is real, Jesus lived and died for us, and we need to just make sure to teach them the right way and make sure that they know that they're loved no matter what.
Oh yeah, 100%, you know, because is God true or not true? You know, if God is true, then this needs to be taught in our schools. It needs to be told in our government. And these politicians on the Republican side say, well, we believe in God, but let's keep it all separate, right? Let's not ever talk about God. Let's never talk about Jesus. You know, I believe a lot of these people are actually agnostics or atheists cosplaying as Christians. And that's just a very unfortunate thing. You know, they worship themselves.
You know, I was unfortunately for a little bit. Now keep in mind, you know, I got real sick 5 years ago now, and I had to reestablish my relationship with Christ and everything. But there for a little bit, I let influence kind of get to me. You know, when you're by yourself and you're sick and you don't know if you're going to live one day or the next, and you don't have no one to talk to, and finally people start talking to you, you tend to listen to what people are interested in and talking, conversing about. And I became one of those that I didn't think I wanted my faith anywhere near politics. I think they do need to go hand in hand. It needs to. as a Republican and as a conservative. The only time I start drawing the line is I think we see a lot of people mishandle it, and they try to weaponize God. They try to weaponize Christ. And there's a story in the Bible where a man cuts off a soldier's ear, and Jesus puts it back on. And that's always really stuck to me. And with that, you know, it's not, to me, it's not my place to go out and engage in spiritual warfare in the sense of I'm going to go out and start eradicating the LGBTQIA. To me, that's, you're going a little too far. You just, the Bible teaches you to pray for your enemies. That's what we're supposed to do. If you don't agree with someone and you consider them your opposition, even if they're Democrat, pray for them. You're not supposed to just put a gun up and go after them. Now, I'm not saying, you know, if you see someone sexually assaulting a woman, pray for them. No, you pull your firearm and you defend that woman immediately. If you walk in on a child being assaulted, I don't care who it is, you stop it immediately. But I think that is, and I think that's really kind of the rhetoric that Democrats have really spun faith when it comes to politics, is we're trying to force it on them. We're weaponizing it. We're coming after them. Well, no, at least I'm not. And a lot of the people I know, they're not doing that. We do put God first in everything that we do. He's in my legislative proposals. He's in my work. He's at my foundation. But we're not killing people in the name of Christ. And that's really kind of what they make it seem like, at least over here. How is that where you're from?
Oh, yeah. They always try to accuse people of this and that, but really we're saving people in the name of Christ, you know? Reviving dead people in the name of Christ. Because when you're spiritually dead, in a sense you are dead, because you're just like this walking meat bag without a soul, and you're so damaged, and you're put up against all sorts of abuses by the demonic enemy. Here at Samuelson State University, we have quite a few good Christian groups, so I would say that it may not be as bad as somewhere like at Columbia or Berkeley, but it's not an automatic thing. We have to keep it this way, right? We have to keep spreading the word, and we also have to resist in every way we can. Ephesians 6:12 says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." So it's not just a casual thing, right? It's also a sort of spiritual fight that we have to wage. And that doesn't mean harming people. That doesn't mean, you know, anything crazy. That just means radical love, I suppose, and radical care. Because the left, they're waging their own spiritual warfare. They have their own religion. They have their own priests. They have their own pantheons and their own sins and their own virtues. And they worship it. You know, like the priest is like Dr. Fauci, people like that. And it's just such a poor imitation.
You're right. And that's, you know, I think that also ties into why we kind of started this podcast. We wanted to promote truth, integrity, transparency, justice, faith. And we're tired of all the static that's out there where it's so hard to tell whether you're going online, whether you're reading the newspaper, what is really going on. Even on our side as Republicans here in Lubbock, the lines get really blurred really quick when money gets involved. And you start talking about titles and positions, and I kind of wanted to share this real quick, and maybe this will make sense to everyone at Tech College Republicans and in the Federation. This is why I took up writing legislation proposals. There's a Habakkuk 2:2-3. Yeah. And this is the King James Version. "And the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. That's why I'm a big proponent in putting faith in our legislation, keeping God first, keeping Christ center. And that's why when we had that big convention, Caleb, in May, I took my legislative proposals and I reached out to politicians, state legislators, directors, and I took the opportunity God gave me and presented them with some legislation to help students at colleges across the U.S., whether they had disabilities, whether they were patients that needed help, and whether they were veterans, too. Caleb and I put a lot of time into this podcast, and you're absolutely right. You've got to keep Christ first and center, or Satan will tear you apart when it comes to politics.
100%. And as you mentioned, when titles and money gets involved, it really reveals the true hearts of men, what they're really fighting for, what they're really seeking. And if you're not seeking a place with the Lord or a better home for your family, and I'm not talking about a better home like buy a McMansion somewhere, I'm talking about on a spiritual, moral, foundational level, then you're going to seek things, trifles, that aren't really worth anything, but seem like everything to you in the moment. And they're going to exploit that because the enemy, they have so much resources, our mind could not even calculate it. They have all of the treasures and all the possessions of the entire world, but we have a weapon far more powerful on our side, in our arsenal, and that is the word of the almighty truth. And that's what slays serpents and casts out demons and wins back the soul of the people who have been trampled upon the last few decades. So that's fundamental. So it's great that you understand it and that you include it when you're working on legislation or when you're speaking to people, because we can't lose sight of that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Caleb, why don't you tell us a little about, because you're vice president of Tech College Republicans, right?
Yeah, I am.
And your faith comes into play quite often in your capacity. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
In all honesty, my faith has shifted in time since the shooting. I clinged to religion for a long time, and I felt like part of me was still alone. And just like one of my favorite poems of all time, Footprints in the Sand, one of my favorite parts is when you look back on your life as you walk through the beach of your life, and you look back and there's only one set of footprints in the sand, and you look over to Jesus and you say, why is there only one set of footprints in the sand? Why did you leave me? And Jesus looks at you and says, I did not leave you. That is when I carried you. And for a long time, it took a while for me to realize that through the hard times of my life, I was carried by Jesus and eventually made it out of the dark tunnel that I found myself in. But one of my favorite verses in the Bible, it comes from when Jesus was hanging on the cross with the two thieves. Luke chapter 23, verse 39 through 43. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us. But the other criminal rebuked him. Don't you fear God, he said, since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus answered him, truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. And it's just honestly one of my absolute favorite verses in the entire Bible. The very first time I ever heard that, it touched a piece of me, and I honestly don't have words to explain it. It's just one of those powerful verses in the Bible that as soon as you hear it or as soon as you read it, it's like, wow. The fact that a man who came and died for us truly loves us enough to die for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely profound. I remember when I was only like 5 or 6 years old, you know, a completely secular family, never went to church. I came across this Bible, and just being near it, I felt this extremely deep, like, presence of some sort, you know, of like, goodness. And I had, like, really no concept of what the Bible even was at that time. It was like 5 or 6, right? So I think that really reveals something that's just so special and wonderful in the Word, and it's something we really have to cherish and remember in our own words.
Yeah. I do have a question for you. Since you have come to college and you found that group that was teaching ministry, did you get baptized?
I haven't been baptized yet. I was thinking about doing it this Easter, but I was out of town. I'm like, man, I really want to get baptized with these guys. I think Easter would be the most special day someone could be baptized. Of course, any day that someone's baptized is a special day in its own right. But I believe it is something that's just such a deep commitment, and I think I'm ready to make that commitment. You know, so I'm thinking maybe this coming, but maybe sooner. What about you?
I got baptized a few months before the shooting, and
wow.
it definitely changed my perspective before then, but I have to give you props, because not a lot of people who have found Jesus have yet to get baptized. And one of the things that I always say to people who have found Jesus, I say, get baptized as soon as you can. It's not the meaning behind it, but it's just a great feeling that as soon as you come out of the water, it's powerful, and you just feel like a giant ray of light just shines upon you at that exact moment as you come out of the water. It's just a powerful feeling.
Yeah, you know, just like when I felt that presence, I was looking at the Bible as 5 or 6. I believe it is, well, I know it is, the presence of the Holy Spirit there with you in that moment. And that's the beautiful thing about baptism.
You said you're also president of the Young Republicans of Walker County, correct?
Yes.
How did that come about?
Oh, yeah. So essentially, there was this one guy, he just moved out of Huntsville. So they had transferred it over to me, because I asked him, hey, you know, I'm interested in becoming the Walker County Republican president. I think I could rebuild it from the ground up, or actually make something bigger and better and unique to Huntsville, in a sense, right? Something that sort of unites everybody, young and old, and just brings the whole community together, especially in the environmental sense, because, you know, I love me those cleanups and volunteering type stuff. So that's how that came about. I'm also president of the American Conservation Coalition, which is where I do like most of my hikings and cleanups. And we've got a lot of interest in that. Just this semester, I've gotten over 200 signups of people to join with me and go on all these adventures and go outside and make it better.
So if young people wanted to get involved, young conservatives and Republicans, Lubbock is very flat, and it's not only flat, it can be very barren depending where you're at. How would you suggest they begin that interaction with their city to start getting more trees put in their city?
Well, the thing is, I believe the most powerful force one could ever have is just to ask. Because if something isn't happening, okay, then it's not happening. Someone says no to something you ask for, then hey man, it's already not happening. You haven't lost anything. So what I do is I just ask. It's a very powerful word to ask, whether they're a politician or a celebrity. They're just people, man, and you got to reach out. So what I do is I'll email my local government. I'll say, hey, can we do such and such? Or, hey, councilman, are you free? And it happens to be the rest were not free. But that's okay. This guy's my favorite anyway. Or, hey, man, can I tour that nuclear reactor? I said, yeah, sure, Nick. Or, hey, man, can I tour that space observatory? So, yeah, Nick, we'd love to have you. And so we went. And, like, what does a space observatory have to do with outdoors? Well, there's nothing more outdoors than space. And that event was so fun. We did that last fall. I don't know if it's lazy to do the same event, like, a year later. But that event was so fun, we're just going to have to do it again. I mean, that was great. So, yeah, that's how you go about it. You send emails, you send texts and calls. Slide in the DMs. That's what I did with Kyle Rittenhouse. And, yeah, no, we've called and stuff like that. It's pretty chill. One time I was showing my phone to my professor, and he happens to call at that exact same time. And my professor's face was like, oh, my gosh. Kyle Rittenhouse. It's great.
Tell us about that. I'm a little intrigued, but right now.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty chill. Although I did meet Kyle Rittenhouse at the Texas Youth Summit as well. So we have, you know, spoken person. I think that's actually our guy's number. But other people I slid in the DMs. Like, hey, Brandon Herrera, you want to hold an event? He has not replied. It's been 8 months. He's probably just busy. But yeah, no, Kyle Rittenhouse. We're planning on doing a range day event sometime this spring, but he had moved to Florida. So I'm like, oh, man, my heart breaks. But, you know, I almost had a Kyle Rittenhouse event on my own, or situation rather, because I was at this protest, right? And we're outnumbered like 30-2 by these Marxists from Antifa. And as we're walking to the car, three Marxists had charged at us. And I actually had my revolver on me. And they had like blunt weapons. I could have pulled it out at the exact moment and been the next Kyle Rittenhouse. But just going back to what I talked about earlier, I don't believe that this is something, you know, worth losing a life over. So we just fought out in the streets. You know, I got hit in the head by a blunt object, fell to the ground. My friend, he was tackling those two guys. But I got back up. I fought back. And then I got detained, got put in handcuffs for, you know, for the fight, I guess. But I got cleared because it was self-defense. And then this guy, he got like an assault charge. And then, of course, that charge got dismissed by a left-wing prosecutor and judge. So that's kind of interesting.
That's crazy.
I know.
I've had people come to me here in Lubbock and ask for access to the Texas Tech students, just because I do have a little bit of a following.
Yeah.
You know, I ran for student government, got elected. There was a whole thing there. We can talk about that later. They had recently asked me if I could get students for a protest in Lubbock, and I was like, what do you mean? What kind of protest? And I wasn't really paying attention to this, what's happening right now with the king. There are no kings in democracy or whatever. And then they start telling me, well, it's going to be a lot of extremist and socialist, and cops are not going to allow certain people to be there. And I said, well, I'm not fixing to throw students in front of cops that are just doing their job and just get them arrested for no reason. That's just ludicrous. So do you think with all these protests, I don't know, are you familiar with the name Timothy Mabry? He's running for lieutenant governor. Have you watched what's happening in San Antonio?
I believe I'm unfamiliar with what's happening in San Antonio.
They had a bunch of people that said they were going to take the Alamo back, and they had to go there. Conservatives and Republicans had to go there last night, and I guess we had the Alamo Part 2, and they were there defending it in case riots broke out, and it was just... Did it get to the point of what we've seen in LA? I didn't think it did. No. But you had people there. He was there ready to defend it. You had people with armed rifles and everything ready to defend the Alamo because of this rhetoric that was going around that the illegal immigrants were going to take it back from Texas and all this crazy stuff that got stirred up. That was really interesting to see, and I say that to say all this because it ties together. Do you think we're going to see an escalation in violence here in Texas with all these protests fixing to start flying off?
Probably in Austin.
You've already had some escalation going on in Austin. They've been throwing scooters and chairs and all sorts of things, and as temperatures flare up, things get hotter out there on the field. People lose their cool. And there's a lot of money behind these things, right? Like there's millions, if not billions of dollars being poured into these NGOs and they're being professionally organized. The propaganda is all across the media because they're portraying Trump, right, as like Hitler 2.0, Hitler but worse. And I'm like, are you guys crazy? Well, they are crazy. Some of them, at least. The rest of them, they're very calculated, actually, and we can't make the mistake that they're all a bunch of fools. Some of them, they know what they're doing. These socialists are trained, and they're training impressionable young people who are just looking for a purpose, who want to enact some kind of justice into doing things that are the opposite. So, unfortunately, this Saturday, there's going to be some stuff like rioting, protesting. That's just the probability when you have over 1,000 of these going on. My hope is that nobody gets hurt and that if people are to fight, let them do it with their words because that's what's most productive. You know, fist, that's not going to persuade anyone. But if a conservative has to defend himself or defend the Alamo, then hey, do so. Or if they're trying to burn down your community and your town, well, you have to stand up for something at some point in your life, right? But
yeah, that's what I've always told people, because I've gotten a lot of flack for taking issue with the administration here at Tech. And I said, you know, understand this. It's not a sin to defend and protect and fight for what you love. You don't have to like the people that run your institution, your city, your state, or even your country. But if you love those things, you'll fight to protect them. And that's kind of what's been my stance, my view on a lot of this. It's just devastating to see that it's come to this point. Even here at Tech, if we're tabling outside, I don't know how it is there. I know a little bit because I'm friends with Drake Serpas.
Great guy.
Yeah, he is. And we can be tabling outside, and we'll have former veterans get mad. We had one of them threaten to hit a member once, and that ended real quick. But we've also had just people come up and see that we're conservatives or Republicans and tell us how we support pedophiles and rapists, or that we are pedophiles and rapists, and
my goodness,
we just have to shut it down. And even, you know, if you get into the whole Palestine, justice for the Palestine and the Hamas movement, I think there is a fine line between freedom of speech and domestic terrorism at some point.
Yeah, because attempting to intimidate or bring about violence for the purpose of your own political personal goal is literally the definition of terrorism. And that's what's going on in a lot of these campuses, unfortunately. Thankfully, Huntsville is a lot more laid back. That's not to say every interaction has been 100% positive. But they don't have to be. Because back in the war, they said, you know you're over the target when you're taking flak. So when people are attacking you for saying this or that, and it's just the common sense, it's just the truth, well, keep saying it and say it louder and say it with your chest, because it's something worth saying. That if there's something worth fighting for, you got to fight for it. Whether it's your family or your faith or your idea, your flag. Because it's not out of hate, as the left wants to claim. They're the most hateful, spiteful bunch there ever was. They're burning down Teslas, even though they used to be the ones who were all driving them. Really, this is out of love, because love means nothing. It's just a buzzword if you're unwilling to fight for it. And I love my country. I love my family. I love golden retrievers and capybaras and pumpkin spice. I'm willing to fight for those things.
I agree.
And coconuts, too. Love them.
I think the capybara thing is what got him. Hey, I'm a wombat fan, so what's up?
I mean, I gotta side with Nick. I love me a capybara.
I'm trying to bring one to campus, actually. I'm going to have that as an event.
That would be awesome.
Where we hung out with the capybara and rode horses and hung out with the kangaroo on, like, a ranch somewhere, just to appreciate, like, animals and outdoors. That was a lot of fun. People love that. But, yeah, capybara on campus.
If you think about it, the capybara is the... Capybara is kind of the horse of the rodent world.
Yeah.
They're like giant hamsters, I mean. Right?
Is that SHSU's animal, or do they have one? Or?
It should be. So our animal, it's like, it's a very weird, like, I don't even know why they chose it, because it's native to Southeast Asia. It used to be tripod the dog. That was simple enough. But we have a bear cat.
Interesting.
That's
interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a binturong. It's like an Indonesian type thing. So we don't even have those here. But I guess they're just small and fierce and tenacious. So,
I mean, I guess. I mean, Texas used to have lions. We know that historically. We found, what do you call it? Their fossils, their remains, bones. I think even in some caves, it's somewhere in Texas, they may have found some more substantial remains, potentially. I'd have to do my research before I outright made that claim, but I've definitely always been interested in, like, the biodiversity of Texas over the years. The days of talking are over, now we're taking action. You know, God bless America, God bless Texas. We are riding right with the Raiders, and we are signing off.
Guns up, Red Raiders.
Guns up.